Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Isolated Ape podcast. I hope you're keeping safe and well. So last week we had season two, episode one, Dave, Chris and Steve. We had a right giggle and it's done really, really well, in fairness. What I have done is on all the podcast providers, I've gone back to just episode number 14 rather than season two, episode one. I think further down the line, it'll be a lot easier to track of how many I've done, things like that. So everywhere else where you get your podcast, it will pop up now as episode number 14. YouTube, it'll stay the same once it's published. It's a lot harder to edit. In other notes, we are now available pretty much everywhere. I use Anchor as my host for the podcast, and that pushes it out then to Apple Podcast apps, Google, Spotify, but I've added a lot more to it. So there's Breaker, Castbox, Overcast, Radio Republic, Player FM, Pocket Cast, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Deezer, and it's on YouTube as well. So it's pretty much available everywhere you can get your podcasts. And like I said in the Instagram post there the other day, if you didn't see it, if there's somewhere that you get your podcast that I haven't got it available, please let me know and I will endeavor to get that up there. On to episode number 15 this week. I've got a mate of mine, Richard Wilson, again a connection from the Lanzarote days. He's now a photographer who's doing really, really well for himself. He's doing the job that he loves to do, obviously not at the moment with the isolation, but you know, he can't wait to get back to it. He's a keen motorsport fan, and is lucky enough and has worked hard enough to get him a position where he can take photos of cars all the time and do what he loves. So he tells us a lot about the photos. There's a photo that you've probably seen in the newspapers, which is you've got a royal seal of approval. We discussed that. And also how we got into photography in the first place. But also the bit that I liked about this story was, you know, we see these beautiful images and we see these beautiful photos, but there's a story behind it, how he got there and the position he had to take and how he got into those positions and things like that. So Yeah, really nice story, really cool story. Now, if you're listening on your podcast provider, obviously you're not going to get any images. If you're watching on YouTube, he has kindly shared a lot of the images we discuss and other ones for me to pop up. And while we're discussing, they show up on screen so you can visualize what we're talking about. Also, if you like any of the images and you want to purchase them, or if you're, again, if you're on the podcast provider and you want to have a look at some of his images, please visit his Instagram page. It's Richard Wilson Productions. So you'll find it Richard_Wilson_Productions. If there's anything there that catches your fancy and you want to buy it, hit him up directly and he'll accommodate you. So yeah, really cool story. Really enjoyed this one. He's a nice guy, lovely, lovely guy, and got some real cool tales to tell. So I'll stop waffling and I'll let you get on with it. Enjoy the podcast. Thanks for your time. And we're off. There we go. Easy as that. So today I've got with me Richard Wilson. Rich, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, mate. How are you? Long time no see.
It's been a long, long time. I think the last time I'm very well. I think the last time we spoke, or the last time I saw you, was probably in Lanzarote, which was, I left in 2012.
I left in 2011.
Okay. Yeah. So that was the last time, and I know we've obviously been in contact on social media and stuff like that, but we were just previously chatting before I pressed record, and we were talking about what I do for a living and do I love it, and I was saying it does everything that it needs to do for me. Do I love it? Do I enjoy it? I mean, it's all right. I've had worse jobs, don't get me wrong, but do I love it? No. And then you asked me what I'd like to do, and I was telling you that I'm enjoying what I'm doing with this podcast. Don't know how I can monetize it. That was pretty much a recap of where we'd got. And I thought, why are we wasting this? Let's chat live, because this is some of the things I want to talk to you about, mate, because okay. I know that you've in our time in Lanzarote, we all worked in the bar trade. That's what we did. PR in bar work, you know, getting pissed and having fun. Right. And then you went home, and did you have a normal 9-to-5 before what you're doing now?
Or? Yeah. So, how do you put it? You go from that kind of bar work lifestyle where it's kind of 8 p.m. till 4 a.m.
And it's never land, mate, and you never grow up.
Exactly. Mm. And I think it was time just to come home and At that time, obviously, with like the economic crash and stuff like that in full swing in Spain, it was very limited to get a, let's call it a proper job over there. So it was just time to come home and kind of start from scratch again and build myself up. And I started out, I've always had like a digital background. So I started out doing kind of e-commerce for a very small clothing chain, which again set me on 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, paid the bills, just kind of finding my own feet from there and adjusting to normal life, shall I say, rather than going out and living for evenings and drinking my own body weight in alcohol.
Which we did. We did a lot of.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was good fun.
It was good fun. My body was happy when I gave it a break there for a while. When I moved away, the body was like, "Oh, thank you, thank you. I needed that." it was good times. And how, like, photography? So obviously, I know to tell the listeners, you professional photographer now. Is that your full time job now, mate?
Yeah, I class that as my full time job. Well, it is my full time job. Professional is a bit of a, I don't know, a strong word. I've always just kind of tried to keep my feet on the ground, and the best way to describe it is it's just a hobby that's got out of control. It's something that companies and individuals are willing to pay me for, which is great. And I enjoy every second. Every day is a new challenge, I just like creating, I don't know, images that tell a story. That's the best way to put it.
I don't, like, obviously they can't see this, but I'm actually sat here grinning, the biggest smile on my face from ear to ear. I love hearing people find their passion and be able to make a living out of it, you know? And, you know, what you'll generally find is when people find their passion and find their way of monetizing it and making a few quid out of it, they're not really in it in the beginning for the money, and then it's the passion that snowballs into earning enough money that it can become your full-time work, right?
How I started out was I think it was 2013. I got a rebate from the taxman. I bought tickets to go to the British Grand Prix, and I thought, right, well, I've only got my iPhone. So I thought, I need something all right to take some pictures. And I bought this tiny little, I think it was a Samsung NX1000 camera, and it had like interchangeable lenses and stuff like that. And I thought, all right, I'll buy a couple of lenses with it.
And again, me, I am zero knowledge when it comes to cameras, technology, photography. So as the layman here now, and as you know, was it a good camera, but for a good amateur camera, or was it? It wasn't the thing that you go down to, you know, that I've got in my cupboard there. Do you know what I mean?
It was a good point and shoot, as what I call it. Obviously, you can switch it on and click away to your heart's content, but it also had enough settings and accessories you can use to improve your own learning base. So I took that with me, and quite a lot of the images were absolutely shocking, to be fair. Obviously, you know, you out of all the good pictures I've taken, there's probably 100,000 bad pictures, just from learning. And the ones that came out okay, you know, kind of nothing to what happens now, but the ones that came out okay really intrigued me, and it was like, right, how do I
get more of them
like that? It was just like, right, I'm really pleased with those, or I could work with those, or you know, obviously learn from those. So
and
it was
at
just...
that stage there, Rich, could I ask, did you have like, so again, I had a mate of mine who's an amateur photographer that goes traveling a lot with his work and in his leisure, and manages to take snaps, you know, and he was talking composition and lighting and this and that. Meant nothing to me, right? You obviously know everything, you know what he means, but did you have any knowledge of that at that stage, or were you very much just going and taking snaps?
I had a good base knowledge, but
And where was that learned? Was that just learned because you enjoyed it, or was it something you did at college? Was it something you studied for? Or
my dad used to do a bit of photography. He was an amateur, I love him to bits, but he was kind of all the gear, no idea type thing, and bought really nice cameras and lenses and stuff. And he used to teach me how to do it, and it became very apparent that I could probably do it better than Dad, which is an interesting kind of way to look at stuff. But it just became trial and error. So you take a picture, and the beauty with digital photography is obviously you can review it straight away. So as soon as you've taken the picture, you can look at it and say, right, I don't like X, Y, and Z. What settings do I need to change currently to make that either sharper, better, make the composition better, etc.? And then you take the next shot. And then, you know, and again, it's, right, that's better, right? How do I improve that further?
Improve that again. Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Whereas, obviously, with film, obviously, it was developed. You had 26 shots, and you had to wait a week to get them back. And you used to get those little stickers on your photograph saying it was either underexposed or overexposed, and you'd be like, oh, shit.
Right, I get it now. Okay, so sorry, go over. So 2013, you went to the Grand Prix.
Yeah, so I did that, and
so that's obviously a big passion of yours, because I can see from the photos that you take. So again, for I'm probably assuming that people have seen the same images that I see on your social media feeds, which they potentially haven't. But you know, Grand Prix cars, motorsport is quite a big part of your portfolio, right?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I've always been a fan of Formula One. You know, Michael Schumacher was my racing sporting hero, and mum and dad used to buy, like Christmas and birthdays, they used to buy like these really nice books with incredible photography in it, and I used to sit there and just think, God, I'd love just to get that close one time, just to try and emulate people like Mark Sutton, Gareth Hayford, Darren Heath, you know, and a plethora of others, where it's not a photograph anymore, it turns into art. And that's kind of what my ambition is, and you know, I'm striving forward and still kind of making gains, and I feel like I've done a lot, but haven't done half as much as I'm intended on doing.
Wow. Yeah, because you've done, you know, from, and again, pictures speak a thousand words and they tell a story, right? And when we look at the photos and how close you are getting to these, you know, Formula One drivers, and you're in the pit lanes, it seems, and you, you know, and right up close, and obviously the famous photo, I'll call it, in, and the one that's, you know, probably been most successful for you was the Lewis Hamilton one, right?
Can yeah.
You explain
yeah.
how you managed to get that. And again, let's big it up and tell it what it is. So it got voted for, or it got nominated for the British Photo of the Year Award. Is
yeah,
that right? It, that-
yeah, for the sporting category, the British Photography Awards. That happened in, when did it happen? February. That happened. And yeah, that photograph was, I don't know, I'm not going to call it luck, because I did think about the photograph before I'd actually taken it, and I set myself up in a position where nobody else could get in front of me, because, you know, Lewis Hamilton, when he's at the British Grand Prix, everybody wants a piece of him. And obviously I was blessed with having the full FIA accreditation, so I was able to stand in the pit lane, do what I need to do, and you know, kind of clicked on my heart's content anyway. And I knew he had this commemorative helmet with the Union Jack on top of his helmet, because he always likes to mark the occasion with something unique. And over the kind of 2-3 practice sessions, I kept noticing every time he got into his car, he always looked down, and it wasn't necessarily just to show his helmet, it was obviously looking down to see where he's putting his feet and making sure he's not stepping on anything, etc. So I kind of took the decision, and before it even walked into the garage, I sat plumb centre at the nose of his car, and I thought, right, I've got this thing about, I like my pictures to be balanced, you know, and if you look through them, there's quite, I'm not going to say symmetry, but it just sits
nicely.
Yeah, I know.
The first photo that I saw of you that really stood out, boom, and I was like, wow, and you were, I think you're in Yorkshire, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember you're taking a lot of kind of countryside photos, and it was the swan going down the lake and the sun was on it. It seemed to be like the sunset and the swan was coming up, and it was right in the center, and the ripples were all rippling out again, kind of a lot of symmetry there, obviously natural symmetry. But that photo was the first one, and I was like, he's getting somewhere here now. This is going to be him now, mate. He's going to be flying, you know? But yeah, I noticed the kind of symmetry in that. It is something that you do seem to have. Yeah.
But anyway,
sorry for interrupting, carry on.
No, it's fine, don't worry. I sat plumb centre in front of the nose of his car and basically waited for him to come into the garage. Now, when one thing I did learn is Formula One's known as the Piranha Club, just because it's kind of everyone's after the same thing and everybody wants to get the, let's call it the exclusive or whatever they want to call it. And as he started coming to the garage, all these photographers started gathering around. And because I was basically sat down looking up at his car, all the other photographers shot him at kind of eye level, so that it was just as you stood up straight across, like parallel to how he stood. And literally, you know, those moments you have split seconds to compose yourself, obviously get the right settings. You've only got one opportunity for it, etc. And I just clicked away, and I haven't shown anybody the outtakes of that. But to be fair, they're all very similar
compositions. Yeah, that was just the best one.
It is at different height levels, and that one just seemed to work. And I remember when I took the picture, I met a friend of mine, Phil, in the kind of at a bar afterwards. And we had a chat, and I showed him this picture at the back of the camera, and he went, mate, when that's all done, can I have a picture, can I have a print of that? And I thought, well, yeah, go on then, you can have one. You know, I didn't really think anything of it. The next morning, I posted that picture on social media, and I just put Lewis Hamilton climbing into his car at Silverstone for qualifying, done. And it went mental. Everyone was just like, great shot, one of the best pictures you've seen, can I have a print of that? And I thought, oh, actually, there might be some legs in this. And again, obviously completed the weekend, you know, one of the best weekends of my life. And then
I was going to say, and then did it eventually, you got the Royal Seal of Approval, right?
Yeah, so I had an Etsy shop where I just sold prints, like just of anything that I'd taken. And, it did all right. And when I announced that picture was going to production, I sold probably 100 of them. Now, bearing in mind, usually the prints that I'd sell, they'd sell one, two, maybe three. I was happy with that. So as soon as I put that on and 100 had gone straight away, I was like, oh, right, okay then. And then, yeah, I got a random email from a random account basically asking if they could have a bespoke print of the Lewis Hamilton picture. So I thought it was a bit of a wind up, to be honest with you. And because this account had no pictures, no followers, no posts, anything, it had this really random name, and I thought, yeah, whatever, that's not a problem. And I kind of just went along with it. And they asked if they could have number one, because it was a limited run. And I turned around the first time and said, look, I want to keep number one. You know, that's it's a special one for me. And they said, how much would you charge if we wanted number one? So I picked a figure out of thin air, to be honest with you. I knew what it had cost to print and manufacture and stuff like that. And they agreed. And I was like, right, it's still a bit of a wind up this, so I'm not going to think anything of it. And then I asked where it was going to be shipped to. And they basically said, look, could you sign a non-disclosure agreement and promise that this is going to be number one, it's going to be hand-signed, it's going to be shipped? And I was like, yeah, that's fine, not a problem. And then they sent this NDA through with the recipients of it, and I was like, shit, right, okay. right, I best have to start taking this one a little bit more seriously. And then it arrived at my house, and I was blown away. To be honest with you, this thing was 70 centimeters wide, 1.10 meters high. You know, and it was on this really nice aluminium finish with a wooden float. And I was like, oh, Christ, I really want to keep this now. Anyway, I posted a picture online about it. And then OK Magazine got in touch with me. Was it OK or Hello? One of them. And they basically said, a source close to the Royal Family say that this is their picture. And I was like, well, I can't confirm or deny it. And they asked me a load of questions, and I answered them as vaguely and as honestly as I could, due to agreements and stuff. And they published a story, and it went nuts. I remember waking up the next morning and looking at the Etsy account and just thinking, yeah, today's a good day. Definitely
today
a good
is
day.
A good day.
Yeah. And it just gained loads of traction from there. And, it's received lots of accolades and nice comments, and it sold a fair few, so I can't complain.
Happy days, mate. Yeah. Happy days. I lost you there slightly, and I know in the recording it'll be grand. Did you mention who bought it? Are you still not allowed?
I'm not allowed to, but if people look it up, they'll be able to find it.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't say it anyway now, because I thought, I didn't realise, like, because I've seen it on social media and I know who's got it, and you didn't tell me who's got it. I'm glad I didn't bloody just spit that out there then now. Yeah, so go and, do you know what I'm going to do? For each of the episodes, I've got a picture of the person. Can I have the picture? I've got a picture of you holding that photo.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's not a problem.
We can use that.
Yeah, I'll email it over to you.
I took a snapshot from your from your Instagram, mate. Plagiarized it. Didn't give a shit. I'm as amateur as it comes, mate. Yeah, and if you come after me, I'm in trouble. But
no, don't worry, mate.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Send it over. It'd be even better. It'll be a better quality anyway. So anyone who doesn't know, have a look at the picture on the episode. You'll see the photo, I'm sure. Then you can Google.
Yeah.
Which member of the royal family bought it?
Yeah.
They're the cool ones. cool, man. And then you do a lot of, I see, going back to the photography and what I see on your social medias and stuff, you love Italy, do you?
Yeah, it's, I think one thing that became apparent to me, obviously, following the Grand Prix and stuff like that is, and as much as I love the sport, Silverstone as a event is great. As a cost exercise is extortionate. It's really expensive. The tickets are probably in, out of the 20 races that go on, is probably in the top three or four price wise. It's great, don't get me wrong, but considering, British summers, you can't guarantee the weather, you can't guarantee, kind of what you imagine a great event to be. I very quickly cottoned on to, and it was basically by chance that we ended up going to the Italian Grand Prix in 2009, I think it was. That was the first year I ever went. And a friend got made redundant, and, he's been really, really good friend, and he was made redundant. And for Christmas, me and my brother, we coined together just to get him a ticket to go to the Italian Grand Prix one year, and we said we'd go with him. Because he's a massive Ferrari fan, I'm a big Ferrari fan, so it was like, right, it's kind of the whole holy ground of motorsport if you're a Ferrari fan. And we went in 2009 and realized how cheap it is to spend the weekend there, to kind of camp or pay for a hotel or whatever, and just have a good time and have better weather and just enjoy it more. And ever since 2009, we've been every single year. And as we've carried on going, we've discovered new places. Obviously, we've met people that we've stayed friends with, and kind of carried on those relationships from there. And every single year, it just seems to get a little bit better. You go out with your friends there and their families, and they invite you in. Italy has hospitality like no other. It's very family orientated, it's very cultured, it's very look after each other, kind of treat people how you expect to be treated kind of thing. And I just cottoned onto it straight away, and I just thought, God, this is nice. Yeah, I get why Italy's such a draw to so many people. And then you look at the landscape and the kind of architecture and the character of the place, and it's just a photographer's dream, to be honest with you. Every street tells a story, and I just love going back. I call it home from home. I'll probably retire there one day, touch wood.
Happy days.
Yeah, I look forward to going back later on this year once all this crap's blown over.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
And you've been to Venice and took a photo for... Tell us that story there now, because that you didn't just go to Venice to take photos, you went to Venice to take a photo.
I've got these things where, you know, everyone's got the bucket list or everybody's got things that they really want to do. And whether that's buy a nice car or buy a watch or, I don't know, go on holiday to a dream location, whatever. And I have these things where it's just like I try and litter my house with pictures that I've taken of memorable moments that I've just wanted to do. And one of them was sunrise in Venice. And again, really fortunate to have a friend that I stay with when I go to Italy and on Lake Como. And basically, I'd hired a car and just decided, right, weather's going to be good tomorrow. Venice is 3 hours away. And then looked at the time that sunrise was, and it was like 4:30. So I went to bed, I think, at about 6 p.m. To wake up at 12 to set off for 1 a.m. to get to Venice for 3:30. And basically, I just planned everything. So it was like, right, I knew exactly where the sun was going to rise. I knew the route that I needed to take to get to, like, the Grand Canal. And I knew where I was going to park. I knew how long the walk was going to be and stuff like that, just to make sure I was there at the key point. Yeah, because, again, driving 3 hours to miss sunrise, I think I would have kicked myself. Yeah, just literally I parked up, ran pretty much the full length of Venice just to make this spot, and then just sat patiently and waited, and the sun came up, and it was lovely to have, it's probably like what Venice is right now, it was lovely to have Venice completely empty, you know, where all you could hear was the ripples of water on each canal, and you'd just be like, oh, this is, I get why people love Venice. And then once I took my picture, it started to get busier. So I left at 7 a.m. and I drove to Verona after that and had a afternoon in Verona.
Madness. And apart from Formula One, and you know, you take photos with plenty of other cars as well that are not Formula One cars, right? Is that something? How did you manage to get into that, and how did that work for you?
I think just building a network, to be honest with you. It was, I've never been afraid to email people or ask people if I can do something, because my mentality is essentially, if I ask and say no, I don't have it. And I never had it. So I haven't lost anything by asking. I've only got something to gain by, you know, asking. Don't get me wrong, there is a way of asking. You can't just go, I want to do this, let me do it. It's everybody wins from it, essentially. You know, obviously, I can take a nice image, you get to keep the image. And when I first started doing photography and stuff, it was, you do a lot of stuff for free, you know, a lot of stuff. And that's where kind of the challenges have arisen was, you know, it's that trade-off, isn't it, between earning money and getting exposure. Now you can't get exposure without getting experience, and sometimes experience has to come for free. So I did a shoot with a couple of friends, and I organized it and took some photographs. Anyway, a local prestigious car dealer, their manager liked the image. And I just sent them a message and just said, look, you know, I'd love to do more. Would you be interested in me helping out? You know, I don't mind doing it. And, you know, we can do a trial shoot first and see if you like the images. He very kindly replied back, goes, yeah, sounds great. Let's give it a whirl. And I told him my idea, and we took a Ferrari 458 Spider into the centre of York at 4 a.m. I think it was Christmas. So, like, all the lights were on and stuff like that. Anyway, we took some really nice images, and I think that's where it kicked off. And then all of a sudden it was, look, we'd like you to come in 3 days a week, and you know, we'll let you drive them. Obviously, you seem to be a safe driver, so you can take them to wherever you need to be. And you know, as long as you can shoot them and manage the social media side of things, that's what I did. And you know, they saw a increase in engagement and inquiries and stuff like that. And I just thought, well, actually, this is quite cool. You know, obviously, I'm in it. Yeah, more importantly, weren't my cars. So, you know, you could not worry about the running costs and things like that. Or, don't get me wrong.
So you're just getting to drive these beautiful cars to locations, take snaps of them, go back, post it up, and benefiting from it. Beautiful.
You know, and
beautiful.
Yeah, these cars are just something that I'd love to aspire to own one, but, you know, I've always decided, you know, I've always kind of declared I'll never be the richest photographer in the world, but, you know, it's one of those things, as long as I'm happy, then, you know, job's a good one.
Yeah. Madness. And again, do you know, you're getting the benefits of it and without having to own it. And again, I noticed that a lot of the kind of the phrases and the taglines, I don't even know what you call them, the kind of, you know, the bit on the description, I suppose, of the photo or what, you're very good at that as well. Is that taking a lot of work? Because that's a different, that's English writing and being good with words rather than just being good with images. Is that something that you've always had a knack for? And I suppose it helps if you're doing it then looking after social media for these kind of people that you need that as well, you know?
I don't know. It's I've always described my photography as like the, I don't know, like the emotional outlet that I use when I can't sometimes put it into words. Now, if I posted a picture of Venice or a Porsche or whatever and just put, this is a Porsche GT3, it's like, well, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. I think most car fans will know that. So I just try and put what I think. Rather than describe what the image is, it's just more, this is the train of thought I had when I was taking it. Because then when I look back at it, it's like the Venice one, you know, I put, you know, it's really nice to be able to relive moments forever from a split second. And, you know, that's, I have this thing where images are like music and smells. If you hear a piece of music or you smell, I don't know, somebody's perfume or a certain food or, I don't know, petrol, whatever. It takes you back to a certain point.
100%, yeah.
Photography.
Music, for me, music is my thing for that. If I hear a song, I'm like, I'm in where I first heard that song or where, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that.
Whereas with photography, every single picture that I take or look back at, I go, oh, I remember that. And I remember what the weather was like, who I met or where I went or what the smell was or... It just brings back more than just looking at a picture.
Yeah.
So I think that's, and again, that's the same with the captions. It's, I just remember what I was thinking at certain points. Obviously with the COVID-19 stuff, when I was asked to go shoot this GT3, it was something I hadn't done for about 3 weeks. And, you know, with photography, I love going out every day and just trying to make something out of nothing, essentially, and it was just nice to reignite that passion again and that desire to carry on doing what I'm doing. And yeah, I think it's taught a lot of people this whole situation where you miss what you took for granted. You know, I've taken for granted the ability just to go out and use my camera, and you know, I vow, yeah, once all this blows over, to grab the bull by the horns and take every opportunity that I can.
Fair play, man. Yeah, I think a lot of people will be doing that. And I think, again, the reason I wanted to speak to you is because you've been through the experience of taking risks and having to take a risk and take a punt to go and, you know, to make your life not a life where it doesn't seem like you have a job. Do you know what I mean? In the nicest possible way. Yeah. Like you love what you do, so you're going to do what you enjoy and you're getting paid for it, you know? And that's, I think we'd all love to do that. It's something I'm trying to drill into my kids, you know, find your passion, do that. And if you can make money out of it, you don't have to be rich. You'll be rich in life. You don't have to be rich in money, you know? What advice would you give to people? What kind of, you know, not necessarily just for photography, but in general of how to go about going from working a 9 to 5. If someone like me, for example, right? I have a job. It pays me well. It looks after my family in terms of healthcare and things like that. It's a lot of risk for me to give that up, right? I understand that. And my missus would be like, yeah, mate, have a think about that, you know? But at the same time, kind of, How did you figure out how to monetize these kind of things? And because, you know, there's many ways, I suppose, and things like that. I don't want to know figures and I don't want to know anything like that. But just in terms of how you went about it, so obviously for yourself, you found a site that could print your photos onto certain things and sell them through that way. And, you know, you got in contact with this guy from the car dealership, and that kind of spiraled into some sort of income and things like that. So is there any other tips and things that you would advise me for this podcast, for example? Yeah, How do I monetize this? How do I get this going?
First of all, like I said before, it's never be afraid to ask. If you don't have it, you don't have it already. So you haven't lost anything. And that's a mentality I've taken all the way through. Now, I've been very fortunate enough to be presented with opportunities through just, I don't know, it's without blowing smoke up my own ass, just be nice. You know, you don't have to be cutthroat or backstabbing or any of these things to get ahead. You know, granted, it might work for some people. I'll always admit there are some people out there that are technically a million miles better than I am. But if you have no people skills and you aren't willing to put yourself out there and talk to the right people and go to the right events, essentially at your own expense, you're always waiting. And it's one of these pet peeves for me where social media has been great for me, right? And you know, I try to use it in the right way. I try to keep my personal life off it as much as I humanly can, and try and focus on work. And it's worked really, really well, like more than probably any other outlet. But social media's now just got to the stage where everybody's expecting everything for nothing, you know. And I have a number of photographers, or I say photographers, kids essentially, that want to do everything straight away. They just think they go from 0 to 100 in a day. Whereas it took me from 2013 to last year, so what, 6 years, to get a full media accreditation. Now, not a lot of people know this, obviously, and I don't mind telling it. It's because it is what it is. But for the Silverstone Grand Prix, I didn't earn, other than the prints that sold afterwards, but I never got paid for that. A company got in touch with me and said, look, we can't afford to pay you, even though it's a well-established company, don't get me wrong, can't afford to pay you, but we'll give you the accreditation. And at that time, I couldn't, you know, it was one of these where it was just like, right, do I go for the experience, something that I've always longed for, what I've driven myself and pushed myself to achieve for no money, or do I hold out and try and get paid for it? And I just thought, you know what, mate, take the punt, just go for it. And even then, you know, again, not a lot of people know this bit, and it just shows the dedication you've got to put into it. I slept in my car for 4 days during that event, because hotels were extortionate, all the campsites were full. So I took a sleeping bag, slept in my car. I got a shower every morning in the media center at Silverstone. That's just the amount of dedication that it takes to sometimes achieve what you want to do. You have to go through these points where you just go, you know what, I'm just going to do it.
But look at the photo you got there, and look at the exposure you got from that. Do you know what I mean? And if you hadn't have taken that punt, you'd still be probably in that same position, not in the position you are now, which I assume after, you know, that one, not that one photo, but the amount of eyes that have come on to you and your photography from that one photo. You know, imagine you didn't take that punt.
Yeah. And that, you know, somebody summed it up. My friend Gareth, when we went through the images, and he basically just turned around and said, look, imagine if you were sat there waiting for that photograph and your battery died, or your memory card was full, or your camera broke, or it's just one of those split second things where, you know, you take a chance in life. And I think it's one of those things, if you're willing to take a chance, you get rewarded tenfold. But you've got to show the dedication and the grit and the determination to want to do those things for no money. And you know, one of the best books I ever read was a book called The Alchemist, and it's a story about a sheep farmer who basically just goes on this journey. But it's more about the esoterical message behind it, where if you want something bad enough, the let's call it the universe or whatever you want to call it, moves out of your way to ensure that you get it. And, you know, you have to take risks in life. And granted, it's a calculated risk. It wasn't a death defying risk. It was just more, you're going to spend quite a lot of money because Silverstone is expensive, you know, to eat, to drink, to whatever. You're going to have to spend money to get the experience. And I got the experience, and it's rewarded me tenfold. By making that sacrifice, because that's what again, from being a kid, having those Formula One books with those great images in, that's what I always long for. And that was a huge moment in my life to go, Christ, I'm one step closer to making it. And, you know, I'd love to do it full time. I really would. I'd love to get the opportunity again, but if I was to get hit by a bus tomorrow, touch wood, I don't, I would be pleased with what I've achieved so far.
No doubt. And you're saying you'd like to go full time. What do you mean? What do you mean by that now? Sorry.
I'd love to do Formula One full time. So
right.
Travel the world, kind of work for either for a media outlet, an agency or whoever, or, you know, for Formula One itself or a team. Because that's what I love. I love the buzz about it. I love the imagery you can get out of it and the different angles you can play with and the lighting and everything from that side of things. And again, it's a passion of mine and I'll never ever forget that weekend and just that feeling of, I don't know, just opportunity and how lucky I was to have that opportunity and I want that again.
Yeah. And again, kind of, we were talking about this side of things in terms of the podcast. Like I'm doing this because I enjoy doing it. I enjoy doing this because I've been wanting to do it for a while and put it out there. And I don't expect any money from it. Who knows when isolation finishes? Is it something that I'll continue on? Do you know what I mean? Life might go back to the norm and you crack on, but I can't foresee me not doing it now. I've been in contact with so many people that I've not spoke to. This is episode number, I think, when you had like season two started. So episode 14 or something in total, you know, that's 14. Out of that 14 people, I'd say there's only five of them that I would speak to regularly. And the others are people that I've not spoke to in ages. So for that alone, it's been great. And I think for me now, I need to kind of branch out and speak to people that I don't necessarily know as well, you know, and start doing that. I've had plenty of people that know, so I know this fella, he'd be great for it. I know this fella, he'd be great for it. I know this lady, she'd be great for it. So I think that's the route I might start tapping. But again, like you say, just asking. There was a guy, a rapper that I'm a big fan of, who wanted to do a music video. Obviously, he's locked on isolation and can't do a music video that he had planned to do. So he just got fans to send in snippets and clips of them going along with the song. And it was put together and released the other day. You know, I sent in a photo of me and my little fella as part of it, and it's in the video. So it's classic. Cool. Check it out. Yeah, Lunar C, LUNAR, C. Lunar C is the rapper, and the song's called Wowzers. He's a lad from Bradford, actually, but he's a well-respected rapper globally, you know. He's
cool.
Yeah, he was a battle rapper, and then kind of he killed the battle rapping scene and smashed it, and then now he's doing albums, and he's very, very good. He's young enough, he's 29, I think he is, around that age, around 30 years old. But yeah, we're in the video, but I'm just going to ask him, what have we got to lose? Do you know what I mean? Just ask him. Ask him nicely.
And I think the great thing about your podcast, having followed season one, is you're not just talking about, I don't know, run-of-the-mill subjects. You're trying to teach people about kind of life lessons and, you know, kind of what it takes to get where you want to be and who you want to be and do what you want to do. And I think the more relevant content you put out there, you can then start spreading your network further afield and asking more and more people to get involved. And when people see that side of things in terms of what you're trying to put out there, it's not just a, let's call it a publicity stunt. It's worthwhile, meaningful subjects. More and more people are cottoning onto it, and more people say yes because they feel like they're adding value to what your podcast and what your audience are gaining.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? And thanks for that, because that's the kind of where I'm trying to get to. It started off as, let's have a chat, because there's plenty of people that are sat doing nothing and I'm sat doing nothing. That's literally, let's have a chat and put it out there and have a bit of crack. And then I started finding people that, you know, were in weird situations because of this COVID-19. So let's have a chat with them. And then I just wanted it to develop. And that's the route I want it to go down. I do see that there's going to be a lot of people that are either going to be out of work. I think the world is going to change immensely after this pandemic has come to an end. I think, you know, the way the world will be and the way we operate from an economic, from a business point of view, from a social point of view, I think is going to change immensely. I can't imagine we're just going to flow back in after, you know, like I look at my kids, I'm terrified. My kids, like when I ask them to go back to school, they're not just going to run in and hug their friends, are they? They've just been told for the last 4 months, don't touch anyone, don't go near anyone. So there's them kind of, so I do think there's going to be a huge change in things. And I think people need to realize that you don't always have to potentially work for the man or do the, you, there's things that you can do for yourself and what's important. And I think I'm going to, you know, there's, and that becomes family side of things. And I've loved the amount of time that I've had with my family, not being in the office. You know, the 20 minutes at the coffee machine in the kitchen, having a chat around the coffee machine, is now downstairs chatting to my family. Do you know what I mean? So not just for people to, I don't want this podcast to turn to people just, you know, who have managed to do things for themselves, trying to tell everyone to do something for themselves. But in, like you say, in general, just giving people advice and ideas and opinions and thoughts to maybe go alongside their own, you know, and broaden their minds a bit. So
yeah, it's we'll see it's how it goes, man. If you can inspire even one person, you've done your job. And you know, I think it goes without saying, I think that the subject matters that you're talking about and kind of the lessons that you're trying to invoke into people and the meaning of what you're trying to put across is inspiring more than just me. You know, so you're doing a great job. And you know, if I can help in any way, shape or form, whether it be contacts, whether it be anything like that, obviously just let me know. I'm always happy to help, mate. And you know, 'cause at the end of the day, I was in your situation. You know, I needed help from people. And you know, if you're a nice enough guy and personable and you are, I don't know, willing to give and take, you know, it's never a one-sided thing. You know, it's you know, people have to see the benefit in it, and if they gain something from it and you gain something from it, then it's a mutual respect and everybody moves forward. And you know, so I've asked loads of people for advice and I've been very fortunate that people have given me good advice and pointed me in the right direction without giving me the work. You know, it's you still have to go out there and get it. And I think that's one thing that social media is not really showing, is you see all these influencers and things like that have, granted, they work hard, but there's a guy, Stephen Bartlett. Do you know him?
He's the social media fella. He's the, where's the hat? Is that right?
Yeah, Social Chain.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
He there was something that really, really stuck with me, and it was, you know, hard work alone doesn't get you where you want to be. Your hard work, your determination, everything has to be met with a sprinkling of luck and an opportunity. And only when your talent and your determination is met with an opportunity do you actually thrive, you know. And all these kids are, granted, are working hard, but not necessarily at the right things. You know, you still have to work on a network. You have to, you know, hone your craft, learn new skills. You can't just think that's it and ask people and expect it for nothing. You have to sacrifice something. You have to really, really want it to be met with an opportunity that you're able to thrive on. Yeah. You know, and that's something that's really, really stuck with me. Yeah. And you know, and forever will do now. I think once it's in there, it's not leaving.
Yeah, I'd agree. He's Stephen Bartlett, you said his name, and the first thing I thought of was the hat. So Stephen Bartlett, the hat's working, mate.
Yeah, keep wearing hats, mate.
Yeah, I mean, do you know the hat? I'm talking, he always seems to wear a black hat with a huge kind of rim around it.
Yeah, it reminds me of Pharrell.
Yes, that's it. And I think a lot of, I read somewhere as well, if you've got a good silhouette, you'll always stand out. Oh, if you think
I'm,
of all the
I'm
big,
true, then I've got a huge, yeah. I've got a huge underbite. So it's like if you put me sideways, I look like Desperate Dan.
But I mean, but even like, you know, if you're the Amy Winehouse and Jimi Hendrix and Bob Marley and all these people, you just see their silhouette, you know exactly who it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, so Stephen Bartley, you got a good silhouette, mate. Well, listen, we'll wrap it up there, Richard. We've had 45 minutes, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much for asking me. I really, really appreciate it. And, you know, I hope, again, your podcast has inspired me. So I hope this, advice goes somewhere to inspire somebody else. And
it certainly will, mate. It certainly will. I think so I started putting things up to YouTube the other day. So I've got the first three or four, I think, up onto YouTube now, the first three or four episodes. So with that, I'm literally just using the logo from the Isolated 8 podcast, the image of the person, and then audio in the background, and just kind of chopping and changing them. But I can bring a couple of titles up and little links here and add more in. Again, like you say, it's learning. I've only learned how to do this. I downloaded some Movie Maker the other day. I'm absolutely bluffing it. I'm sure it's very amateur and it'll get better. But I was listening, obviously, I don't know if you heard last night's one that I released with Chris, Dave and Stevie Nicks.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So I laughed all the way through that. I think I'm going to do one of them occasionally. You know, I wouldn't be able to do that every week. It's just a group of lads getting together and slagging each other off, right? So more than anything. But it's got an awful lot of feedback. Like in it, we were mocking how many little views that the others have had and things like that. They've doubled the views of any other person so far, and it's only been on one night. So that is obviously working, and having that crack and having that banter is something that people want to hear as well. So I'm definitely going to take heed of that, you know. But I was listening to it last night even, and I just turned it on, and the missus came in and she was like, it sounds like I had the intro with me explaining what's going on, then the new theme tune, and then it going into the lads and the bit of music at the end. And Sarah was like, sounds good, mate. And I was like, you wouldn't think it was me up in that fucking bedroom bluffing away as we are, would you? I was like, it actually does sound all right. I'm getting kind of...
What do you think I'm doing in this bedroom? I'm doing this.
Yeah. Oh, mate. And I tell you, like, I'm up in the baby's room, right? So the baby's bed's next to me here, literally. And I've managed to squeeze a desk in and stuff for working from home. And I'm using that as well to do the podcast as well, you know. But yeah, when I listened to it last night on Spotify, and I see it on iTunes, which is what I listen to my podcasts on, or the Apple podcast app, I see it on that and I'm like, yeah, man, it's getting somewhere. It sounds decent. And then today I managed to link up to about 7 or 8 different other podcast channels as such, do you know, where you can kind of listen to it. So I'm just trying to find it here now. Like there's many now. So before it was literally Spotify, SoundCloud, and the podcast, Apple podcast app. But now Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Republic. Like it's so pretty much it's available anywhere people can. I'm just waiting for Google Podcasts to approve and we're off. You know, it's literally everywhere then. So now, even in the taglines and on social media, and you're saying it's available here, now available wherever you get your podcasts, it's going to be getting good. So that's good. So yeah, can I ask? Do you know for the YouTube? Do you mind? We spoke about. Do you know the swan photo?
Yeah.
Obviously the Royal Seal of Approval photo. And if there's any, and the Lake Como one, do you mind on the YouTube channel if I put those photos up when we're talking about it?
Yeah, again, I'll send them over via email so that they're better quality because I've got this thing.
Perfect. And I know it's got your watermark on it and things like that, but it'd be cool just to, again, so when people are watching, they can visualize what we're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, that's cool, mate. Not a problem at all. But yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Hope the family are well.
They are very well, mate. They're busy, but they're well. They're busy being bored. Do you know that way?
Well, yeah. Ditto, mate. Ditto. But yeah, obviously keep in touch. And again,
100%.
Like I said, if you need anything, just give me a shout. I'm more than happy to help you out.
Perfect. And if you find those, it over to isolatedape@gmail.com.
Cool.
Simple as me.
No problem.
Legend. Loved it. Thanks for your time today, mate. Right, absolute mate. Star. Stay safe. And I only see you going on to bigger and better things, mate. So you're Formula One full time soon. I see it.
Ditto.
See it.
Ditto, mate. It. All right, mate.
Take care, bro.
See you soon, mate.
Bye bye now.
Bye.